Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey, everyone. This is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I am here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my co-host and husband, Gino Barbaro.
I'm my co-host, aren't I, today, huh? This is going to be a very interesting podcast today because right about now, I think people have been home with their kids about a week and a half, and they're probably just wanting to commit murder, and we're calling them the mini terrorists out there. So for us, what we wanted to talk about today was negotiating with your kids, right? We had an amazing call last week. We had a master call with Chris Voss. If you've never read the book, Never Split the Difference, pick up the book on negotiation. It is amazing. And I'll let my wife talk about the epiphany that she had on, because she was on and she was taking notes like a mad woman. I mean, the notes were flying. I was like, wow, I'm glad she was on this call.
Well, it was interesting because he always talks about this one guy, Christopher Voss, and his son, who also has been on Juno's podcast, you know, negotiator. And I'm like, well, that's pretty, you know, interesting. A hostage negotiator. That's really amazing. And so when he said that he was having a mastermind with his company, I'm like, listen, can I just sit on? Because I just want to hear. And as he was speaking about, you know, negotiating with the terrorists or trying to get that person to come out or to release the hostages or whatever, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just like talking to the kids. I'm like, this is incredible. I'm going to take notes and I'm going to figure this out. And as I was doing it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been doing this forever. I get it. This is what, you know, it's exhausting. It's so tiring. Sometimes you just want to yell, you know, please just do it because I said so. And we've all said it. I still say it. I said it today. But it's one of those things where it's, you know, every situation we go in with the kids, when we're trying to negotiate with them, when we're trying to maybe talk them into doing something, there's a strategy to it. And that's what we want to talk about.
So full disclosure, when I first had our first child, I was supposed to be the tough guy, you know, not give in, maybe a little spanking every now and again. I have gone so opposite from that. I don't know what the hell happened to me. I mean, I used to be this tough guy. Now it's like,
well, yeah, you thought you were the tough guy. I just want to be clear. You thought so. It wasn't. You weren't that. You weren't like that.
Do you know why? Because for me, it was always counterintuitive. Yes. Why would I spank my kids and put the fear of God into them to make them do something? Why would I speak and yell at my child all the time? When, if we do that in the workplace, we're going to get put in jail. So why would we speak to our kids that way? It's because maybe our parents did it to us. And it's all those limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. I always bring it back to the money aspect, to the business aspect. You, whatever your beliefs are from our money or probably from your parents. And the same as the parenting skills, mm-hmm. they don't have to be. And I think the beginning starting point is to have that conscious awareness that as parents, I think the biggest responsibility that we have is to create a loving, caring environment where they can grow, where you don't criticize them, right? You don't want to put them down and criticize them, but you want to tell them to have a growth mindset, to work hard, to be able to have them start making decisions on their own. So when they become adults, they can leave and make their own decisions. And that's really a hard thing to do because we want to tell our kids all the time what to do. Mm-hmm. And I was told a lot when I was younger, what to do. My mom ended up doing a lot of stuff for me. And you know, when I got married, I didn't even do the laundry. I didn't even call.
Well, you still don't. So let's just hold on.
I didn't call the cable company. I didn't call for my bills. And that was probably a bad thing. I mean, I figured it out because I was motivated and I was smart mm-hmm. enough, but I think negotiation, it's an everyday tool. And then just, Julie, let me say this one thing that I really pulled off from the call with Chris, and it's really important. I want everyone to remember this word. It's called autonomy. When we lose our autonomy or our autonomy is taken away, like what's going on right now in the economy, everyone feels like, wow, you're losing yourself. You have all this fear and you're put up against the corner and you're boxed in. Bad things happen. And what Chris said, which was really interesting, and I'm going to take a jab at the Democrats, when all of a sudden you think you're right and you're using negative emotions, it leads to you doing stupider things. Now, everyone out there knew, for example, that Trump was not going to get impeached. He just wasn't. why would you keep going down that road? You may be right. I'm just saying, why go down that road? Using lower emotions, you're not going to win that argument. Move on to the next argument. So not to bring politics in it, but that's just an example of having hatred for something so much that it clouds your judgment. And what Chris said was, the more emotions you have, you think you're right. You can't even see logically anymore. You're not using logic anymore to deduce it. And negotiation has a lot to do with it. And we've run through this with our kids a lot of times. I get so mad. Right. Last night, I was like, guys, every single night I'm trying to put you to bed, it's the same thing. And I'm thinking to myself, there goes the emotions. Right. I'm not using logic. It's frustrating. Get caught up in the moment. But if you can be conscious and be aware of what's going on at the time, just calm down a second and take a step back.
Yeah, and that's the number one. The number one thing that we have to figure out is, what's our mood like? Where are we? Like Gino said, because if we're worked up and we're angry and we're yelling and we're frustrated, the conversation is not going to go well right off the bat. And we know that. So that's really the thing. It's like, okay, let me talk about it when I'm in a calmer mood, or somehow get myself in a calmer mood. Because if something's bothering me, the kids are doing something that's driving me crazy, I got to come to them and I got to have that conversation. So let me be in a better spot. Also, the good thing about being a parent is you know your children better than anyone. You know them better than a teacher, better than anyone else out there, a friend, because you grew up with them. You formed them. You were the one that guided them to where they are now. So you know them. So see, are they in a good mood? What's their mood like? What's their environment like? Because that's also going to make a difference too. So if you're going into the conversation and they're already in a bad mood, which I'm going to tell you a story about, it's not going to go well initially. So it's something to think about too. It was 2 days ago, my daughter Cecilia was doing her math work and I could tell she was frustrated. And I approached her and I said, Cecilia, can I give you a hand? And she just mumbled something. She was clearly irritated. And I knew she couldn't do it because she didn't learn it yet. She didn't learn how to do that yet. And I mentioned that and I said, listen. And then I stopped myself. I said, you know what? I just did the mastermind with Christopher Voss. I'm like, let me use his approach and I'm going to see. And I sat down. I'm like, Cece, I have some bad news for you. You haven't done this yet. You actually don't know how to do it yet. If you need some help, I want you to let me know. I'm right here. And I said, why don't you give yourself a couple more tries? Give yourself two more tries. And if you don't get it, let me know. And so she did, and she was frustrated and she was angry. And I felt so bad because I really knew she couldn't do it. And so after those couple times, she's like, you don't even want to help me anyway. And so she was just blurting out things because she was being emotional. And I said, I would love to help you. And I did. I messed up one of the problems because I wanted her to feel, you know, sure of herself. It was a simple addition that I messed up purposely. And she corrected me and she just lit up. She's like, Mom, that's not right. So that made her, it changed her state a little bit. And so at the end of the problem, I was like, Cece, I knew you could do it. You did an awesome job. Look, when we do it together. And so the whole state of her changed. And from then on, she was actually in a better mood. So I was really proud of her.
So don't gloss over that. Really quick, everybody out there, there's the lesson right there. Use that correction technique. And I'm going to bring this into the business world. If you're dealing with a broker, and the broker does something and you make a little mistake and that broker corrects you, we all like to be smart. We all like to feel like we're knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. So if you do that, you can actually do that and say, oh, I thought it was a 6 cap in the market. No, the broker's like 6.5. Oh, thanks for, you know, correcting me. I didn't know that, right? That's a technique that a lot of smart negotiators use. That old show Columbo, remember old Columbo with that, when the he was the private investigator or whatever, the cop going around and asking those dumb questions. I want to get into those empowering questions because mm-hmm. it's really important what kind of questions you should be asking your children when you're quote unquote negotiating with them. And I think being deferential and you know, playing that role where you're not sure and asking those questions, you always want to know what's going on with the other side. The more you can have your children talk to you about what's going on, the more you can assess the situation and see how you can help them out.
Yeah. And another thing too, I noticed that if I, you know, actually mention what they're feeling, I think that they are a little surprised because I one of the things I said, you seem to be frustrated. And I was, you know, I got more of a reaction from that in a positive way because she knew that I could figure that out. And she liked that, you know, because sometimes as a child, it's hard to explain how they're feeling. And that's really frustrating for them on its own. So if you could pinpoint what they're feeling and maybe mention it in a positive way of, you seem to be frustrated, you seem to be angry, you know, you want to talk about it. Is this, you know, what do you think?
And I like that, because you can never assume or say somebody, it's you are, you know, you don't want to say to the person, you're frustrated, or I know how you feel, because you don't know how the little child feels. My wife doesn't know how I feel. You always would say, it seems like, it sounds like it, you know, that's how you lead with that. And it's important to do that. Mm-hmm. Now I was thinking about one of the stories that my wife is telling me about the iPad story. And I think it's just losing your autonomy. And I want her to tell you the story, because it's amazing how, like, when you're really annoyed and really mad, you do stupid things and you lose your autonomy. Mm-hmm. So let's share that story.
So it's interesting. One of Chris Voss, when he told a story about, you know, a person that's, you know, a hostage person, they're in there, they're angry. And if you say to them, you know, I'm going to come in there, I'm going to shoot you in the head, they'll be like, all right, go ahead. You know, they're just, and it made me actually laugh out loud when he said that, because my kids will do that. And I know everyone out there, that your kids, even us, when we get so frustrated, we're like, yeah, go ahead. So my daughter was getting in trouble, and I'm like, listen, if you don't stop, I'm going to throw out your iPad. And the reaction was, yeah, go ahead. I thought, what? You're just like that, you know, that terrorist. I'm like, how interesting that is, because at that moment, we are so frustrated that we actually don't care. We don't care if you throw it out. We don't care if you shoot us. You know what I mean? So that's very interesting. And so we try to get the kid out of that emotion.
And Julie, you know what the worst part about being in that state is? So if we bring in the levels of energy, that's like a level one and level two, right? That's between being a victim and being really angry. The worst part about being in that state right there is there's no solutions. Mm-hmm. You can't come up with solutions. Right. You need to calm down. You need to walk away for a few minutes, and then you need to come back. Because if you're there, all it is that negative energy leads to lower intelligence. Like I said before, really important. I want to hit something really quick that Julia had mentioned before. It's mirroring. So when a child is saying something to you, like, you know, dad, I'm having a little problem with this. I don't know how to do this. You can just mirror right back to them and say, hey, Julia, you're having a problem with this? Is that what I hear? And then that'll just reaffirm that you're listening to them. That's one of the techniques that Chris speaks about in his book. And what I would do is I would go to the Jake and Gino channel on iTunes, look up Chris Voss. We have two shows with Chris, and we have one with his son, Brandon. And then we have another one with their employee, Derek Gaunt. They all work at Black Swan. Listen to those four podcasts. I will tell you, it will revolutionize the way you think about negotiation. Getting to no is more important than getting to yes. I'm not going to get into that now, but there's so many great golden nuggets and tips in those podcasts about negotiation and trying to work with the other side and providing value. It's amazing. And ultimately, if any life coaches out there, it really is a lot of life coaching. It really is having a lot of patience and asking those questions.
Right. No, and to stay calm and to give a break in between of what you say, because sometimes we bombard each other with words and we don't give the other person. And that's not just with the kids. I'm talking with everyone. Sometimes we don't give them a chance to think about what you said. So a little pause in between, you know, I'm noticing that you're frustrated. Give it a pause, let them answer, because that's important for them to think about it. You know, our children are, they're emotionally immature, you know, and our goal as parents is to guide them on a maturity path to adulthood. How many adults do we know that are emotionally immature?
Me?
You know, you're not that bad.
I'm not that bad. Do you hear that, everybody? She actually said in the podcast that I'm not that bad. That's a low bar right there.
So, you know, so it's our job to walk with them and guide them, not tell them how to do it, but guide them, because they're going to mess up. We mess up all the time. So we're allowing them to grow into their own person. And that's important when we're talking about this, because, you know, like I said in the beginning, we all yell out, you got to clean up, you know, it's your responsibility. But what does that mean? You know, are we being responsible? Are we explaining what that means to them? Because that's so important.
I pulled a quote from his book, and I want to read it. And I want everyone to sit there for a second and really think about it and think about the last time you did this. Most people approach a negotiation so preoccupied by the arguments that they support their position that they are unable to listen attentively. Have you done that before? I've done that a lot of times. I'm so preoccupied by my my stance and my beliefs, then I'm unable to listen to what the other person, and you can do that with your children. You want Cecilia to do her math work. You're not even listening to the fact that she might not even be able to know how to do it, or she's right. struggling with yeah. it. So we're so preoccupied with what we want mm-hmm. that we're not even there to listen to them. And listening is huge mm-hmm. when it comes to negotiation. We've done podcasts on listening before, Julie and I, the three forms of listening. Listening is an art mm-hmm. because most of us like to be heard, and we're always ready to go on the next one. The next time, just stop. The next time you have something with one of your children, and just really sit there and really listen and be attentive and see if you can pick out what the true problem is. So remember, we approach a negotiation so preoccupied by the arguments that support their position that they're unable to listen attentively. That is huge. If you're in a business negotiation and you want to get the price down and that's all you're focused on, well, see what else is going on. Why is the seller selling? Maybe he's not just focused on price. Maybe he just needs to exit this deal, and that's not his main focus, is just price. He's focused really on getting somebody who can just close on this property. So don't be attentive by just what you want. See what the other side wants. See what your kids want.
Yeah, and that's hard when you have little children, because, you know, in a time where everyone's home all the time, it gets overwhelming to listen to everyone constantly. And it's like, oh my gosh, please just stop talking. You know, I think I've said that before, but it is, it's a huge effort as a parent. But, you know, we always want to do best for our children. We always want to do best for each other, even in a relationship. And listening is so crucial. Because it's not about us all the time. It's about all of us together, working together as a team. And, you know, what kind of team is that if it's really just one-sided? So it's important to go in and really pay attention, ask those questions. What's going on? I'm here for you. But it's important to make it about them, not about me.
So what kind of questions? Let's start out with the question, why. Why is usually more triggers a defensive reaction. So why is not the greatest question to ask. What, you know, how.
Do you mean like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, exactly. Why are you doing that? I mean, that just like, what do you want me doing that? You know, so be careful using the word why. Sometimes if you want to be direct, you know, when you're dealing with real estate, you can say, why are you selling? Mm-hmm. Just to find out, oh, why are you selling? You know, mm-hmm. that's not a trigger, something defensive, but with your children, exactly. Why did you park the car there?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a defensive trigger. So be careful. We've done podcasts on empowering questions. Mm-hmm. Empowering questions are open-ended, mm-hmm. thought-provoking. They're not just yes or no answers. They make you really want to dive in and think about it and have the child think about it and ask one and then ask another. It's like peeling back an onion, the layers of an onion.
Yeah. And you know, Chris also in the mastermind that we did, he said something that I absolutely loved, because a lot of the times we come to each other, the kids come, you know, to us, my husband, and they're like, did I do something wrong? Are you mad at me? And I think that's the most irritating question ever. And I never could figure out until he mentioned it the other day. And I'm like, because it's about the other person. It's not about me. It's about you. What mm-hmm. did you do wrong? And he said something that is so great. And this is a little something to share with you, because I think it will really help even in a marriage. And the question would be, it seems like I have offended you. Did I do something? You know, instead of saying, did I do something? It seems you're offended. And I like that, because it's about you, not about me.
What makes you like that?
I don't know.
I'm not going to say why, but what makes you like that?
Well, be like I just said, it's you're coming to me saying, Julie, it seems that I've offended you. It again, when you're saying, are you mad at me? Did I do something wrong? It's not me. Really about me. It's about you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get it?
Yeah, I do get it. Okay. No, I get it. I'm trying to dig a little deeper. I'm trying to peel the onion there a little bit. So for me, really go back and take a look at what those empowering questions are. You have so many techniques in the book. There is the mirroring book, the mirroring technique you have. Mm-hmm. There's the listening, I think is a technique right there. Yeah. So let's talk about what he mentions in the book, the accusation audit. You want to go through a story on that? The accusation audit is freaking awesome. I mean, it's basically getting all the crap out on the front end and trying to shift a person's perspective. So one of the coaches on the call is going through a deal, and he's has to what we call retrade or ask for a credit because the numbers don't work. So Chris's suggestion was use an accusation audit. Get everything out in the bad on the front end. And this is basically what he wanted the student, the coach, to say. You know, Mr. Broker, I've got some really bad news for you. You're not going to like what I got to say, but I have to say it. So you're already shifting their mind. I've got to come in and I've got to give you a lower price, and here's why. And that really works. You can work with children. I want to have Julia give an example how she would use that with kids. But what you're doing really on that accusation audit is you're just shifting everything. And instead of saying, hey, Mr. Broker, I'm going to cut the price by 100 grand, that doesn't give the broker a chance to actually diagnose and actually absorb that net knowledge right away. When you're telling them everything up front, you're just leaving it open and being completely honest with them. And obviously they're not going to be mad, but their perspective is shifted. Now they're already expecting the bad news. How bad can it get? So that works really, really well in business and in negotiation.
Well, you definitely get people's attention when you start off with, hey guys, I have some bad news. Everyone looks over mm-hmm. because for some reason we want to hear bad news first. I don't know what it is.
Yep.
You know, but when I we have a daughter who's petrified of public speaking in every way. And it's funny because she's super outgoing, crazy, silly at home. I mean, she'll sing opera like crazy, you know what I mean? But when it comes to other people in the room, she's petrified. And so that was the opening line is, you know, I have some bad news for you, Veronica. This is going to be hard, but you know, we're scheduled to do it. You have a presentation and you know, let's talk about it. And it's interesting because, like I said, that catches their attention and they're listening. And that's the number one. And then there's a nice pause because then they're like, well, Mom, what do you mean? You know, tell me, what do you mean? And so then we went through the what is it about speaking in front of people that makes you nervous because you're so good at it. You're so amazing at it. And, you know, you give them a little compliment. You deactivate the negativity and you give them something that they know they're good at it. You know, it's not just fluffy stuff. It's like, you know, you actually have a gift. And what it came down to is that we came to the thought, well, why don't we prepare for it? What if we really prepare for it and you know it heart by heart, you know, and you practice it over and over again. And that's really what it came out to be. It was just preparation. Preparation usually makes us nervous, especially if we have to talk. I'm just telling you, be prepared. And then you end with the, you know, I didn't expect this from you. I'm really proud of you because I expected you to give me a hard time and you didn't. And I just want to thank you. You're really growing into a, you know, this beautiful woman, this little lady, you know, and it's so important for us to give them a real compliment, something that we don't normally give them every once in a while to just, you know, make them feel like they're worth it.
So that's really important. What you just mentioned, you know, Chris had mentioned the last impression is a lasting impression. You can have a lot of, you know, a bit of bad news and a bit of regular news, but end it off with positive. Mm-hmm. By the way, you've done a great job. Even if the child hasn't gotten an A, all the hard work you've put into it,
so important.
I'm really proud of mm-hmm. you. Let's keep working hard. That lasting impression, that positive lasting impression, whether you're writing an email to somebody, sending a mm-hmm. text over. And that's why the Italians, we love to have the espresso at the very end with a nice dessert. When you're in a restaurant, that lasting impression, you may have a great osso buco, but what happens when the espresso comes out and it's watery?
Oh, and that ruins our meal every time.
And the tiramisu is boxed tiramisu. You're like, what happened? You don't even remember that you had the nice, you know, veal cutlet parm, whatever you had.
Well, the trick is now is we order one espresso. I wait to see it. And then I'll say,
I'm the sucker, right? I'm the sucker. So exactly. So that's really important, that lasting impression. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Gino and I are super excited to tell you about the audiobook version of The Honeybee, which was recently released.
The Honeybee tells the story of Noah, a disappointed, disaffected salesman who feels like his life is going nowhere until the day he has a chance encounter with a man named Tom Barnum, the beekeeper. In his charming, down-home way, Tom, the bee man, teaches Noah and his wife Emma how to grow their personal wealth using the lessons he learned from his beekeeping passion.
In the audio version, Gino and I sat down for an exclusive interview after each chapter where we elaborate on the stings we felt throughout the business, the importance of scaling up, and how we've been able to create multiple streams of revenue.
For more information and to get your copy of the audiobook, visit jakeandgino.com/honeybee.
Julie, I want to start off this next segment just with another quote that Chris had, and let's digest this one and let's let everyone think about it because it's so important, right? The goal is to identify what your counterparts actually need and get them feeling safe enough to talk and talk some more about what they want. Now, this is great for mm-hmm. kids because if you can have them talk about it, and this is great in business too, because if you're talking to a broker or a seller, let them feel comfortable with you. Let them feel comfortable in that situation. And then they're going to talk a little bit and go, you know, it's not about the price for me. It's really, mm-hmm. I just really need to sell. I'm really burned out. The management fee, management companies are terrible. You're getting more information and use that with your children. Also, when you're getting negotiating with your kids, let them get comfortable and let them talk to you about really what the problem is. See, with Cecilia, back to that example, it's not that she didn't want to do her math. It's ultimately that she couldn't do it, that she never did it before. And with Veronica, it's ultimately not that she just didn't want to do the public speaking. She was petrified about it. And it was the preparation. And I'm still trying to figure out, going in my head, what I can do at nighttime, because I know tonight's going to be the same thing. They've had a great day. They've been hanging out in the pool for 2 hours tonight. Then when I put them to bed, they all get into this argument.
Change their state.
How do I change their state? There was one night
where I heard bicker, bicker, bicker. And all of a sudden, there was hysterical laughing. And I just want to tell you that it was when you hid under their bed.
Yes.
Okay.
3 nights ago, I decided to.
You hid under their bed and then you scared them. And it was the funniest thing ever because you changed their state.
I can't do that every night though. Like you said, it's a big effort. Hard.
Thank you.
Well, to come up with something original every night.
That's the challenge.
She's looking under the bed every night. So I can't do that. And I got to hide behind the door underneath the closet. Yeah. So
that's the hard part about parenting. And that's, you know, I'm not downplaying, any kind of FBI guy, but you know, they're dealing with someone in a negotiation situation. And then they go home. Our kids are home all the time. And that's really difficult. It's constant. It's all the time. And it's always. So you know what? Give yourself a pass. Don't be so hard on yourself. I mess up all the time. Probably like 75% of the time.
Maybe 90, but who's counting?
I have really good days.
Then those weeks go by where she's like, what the heck? Yes. So what Julia said, honestly, is truly, really, really important. Chris Voss, maybe when he's dealing with an FBI negotiation, he has detached him. He's detached mm-hmm. from it. He's not emotional. Completely. He doesn't know the person. We know our kids right. and we have a vested interest. That's why
we know they're not leaving too.
Yeah, well, hopefully my kids can stay with me as long as they want. For my wife, I don't know, but think about it. Think about it. My children, I know them. I know their every move. I want them to succeed. I have a vested interest in it. When you're a life coach or when you're an FBI negotiator, you want that detached part about it. You want to be empathetic. You don't want to be rooting for the other side. You want them to succeed, but that can't be in your best interest. You're just working with them, mm-hmm. asking them those questions and trying to get them where they have to go. Mm-hmm. Whereas with us, with our children or somebody we love in our family, we're rooting so hard for them that we don't want them to do the hard work. We want them sometimes to do the work for them. And that's not good.
You know, when we get like that, sometimes we get frustrated because we want so much for them and they're not figuring that out, you know? And so then we get angry, mm-hmm. right? So when the kid's not doing well in school, we get mad at them because we're just worried about them. And so if we just change that a little bit, it's like, why am I getting mad? They're not doing school. Okay, let me change myself and say, you know what? Let me just be more supportive. Change that emotion to more supportive. And you know, something you said before about them being able to come to you and open up, that all comes from trust. And that all comes from our attitude with them. Like it kind of comes into what I'm saying is that, are we approachable? When the kids come to us, are we going to yell at them? Are we going to tell them not now? Because if we are, they're not going to come to us and they're not going to trust us and they're going to go to someone else. So our reaction is so important to when they come to us or when they have an issue. Our reaction is everything.
So how do we do that? We have to be conscious of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And also we have to be aware of where our level of energy is. Right now, everyone's a little down about what's going on, and I'm included. It's really hard to get motivated right now. So I can have a lot of sympathy for a lot of parents out there that mm-hmm. are working from home, that haven't homeschooled, and all of a sudden they're thrust upon doing work at the house, mm-hmm. having limited time outside, having limited contact with other adults, and having the kids home and teaching them. Just be aware that, you know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It is hard, especially when you've never done it before. So just be aware of how you're reacting and look at it maybe as a blessing because they're going to go back to school, right? I mean, eventually they're going to do either online or go back to school. So see if it works out. And I tell you, if you can stick into it for the long term, you're going to love it because it's going to be something completely different. you're going to have a different relationship with your children and your siblings, with the siblings amongst themselves. They're going to get along. So there's a lot of pros and cons to it. Mm-hmm. So I know it's tough right now. I know we're working through stuff. Negotiating with the kids is like negotiating with terrorists sometimes, because they're irrational. They're growing, right? They want their autonomy. That's why teenagers might be difficult. I never had the problem with teenagers, because my kids honestly have been really wonderful. My son is, he's amazing. He's such a better person than me. Even his, he's just an unbelievable kid. And, but when they're growing as teenagers, they're having chemical imbalances. Their brains are growing. They're looking to be autonomous. They want to be left alone, and they, because they want to have their own self, but at the same time, they want to be part of the family. So there's like a push and pull kind of thing. And we just have to be there and be able to listen to them and be able to be there for whatever challenges they might face.
Yeah. And you know, it's also, it's okay to ask them. You know, we forget that we could just say, hey, you know, I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to juggle, like, do you want me around? Do you not want me around? Like, mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure that out. And that actually is very interesting, because we forget that we could just ask, you know, our teens and our young adults are, you know, they're older. They can have a conversation with you. And I love it. Mm-hmm. I love to ask them questions, because, you know, and then the younger kids kind of jump on it, which is interesting sometimes. But, it, you know, ask the older kids, you know, tell me what, where, you know, how do you fit in this family? I want to know, like, do you feel like at a place? Because a lot of times now we have four younger kids and two older kids. That's why I feel like there's like a break where there's, you know, 17 and up, and then, you know, so I could see that they sometimes maybe feel like they're missing out on something, and that's something to talk about.
So I want everyone to challenge me next week, especially my wife. How did my next 5 or 6 nights of putting the kids to sleep go? I'm going to really try to do my best.
This
I'm
is the moment where present. I should just help you.
How are you going to help
me? I feel
me?
Like I retired from that a little while ago.
Oh, long.
I love it.
You threw the onus on
I
me.
And the little one still.
The little one's sleeping. The little one's sleeping on the couch. What are you talking about? She's on the
she's
couch.
Snuggling
sleeping.
With me.
Yeah, exactly. So she's got the easy job. But I really, there's the three of them in the room, and that's really negotiation 101, and I'm working on it, and every night it's different. Honestly, part of the problem is they're overtired, because we stay up a little bit late. They're overtired. They've been out all day, and it's really difficult, and there's always one that's the problem.
Here, I'll give you a little advice, a little parenting advice.
I'm all ears.
So what if you went in tonight and say, hey, girls, let's talk. Let's sit down. Tell me what's going on. Every night we come in, let's come up with a solution.
Oh, every night we're praying. That's how we start out with you. So you think we're praying to Jesus. You think that would help, right? They're not Jesus. They're Satan, it seems like sometimes. So what's going on here, you know? Hail Mary. Mary, yeah, help me out here, Mary, you know? I don't know what's going on. So, okay, keep going.
It's a conversation. Okay. It's a conversation that they want to feel part of. They want to, you know, maybe be part of the solution instead of just dad telling us to go to bed.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to try.
It's a lot.
Okay. I'm going to try.
But there is one thing that I want to make clear, because we were talking about this earlier when I mentioned a lot of adults with immature emotions. We want to be careful not to coddle the children so much to the point where, you know, everything is about them. Everything is about their emotions, you know, because there is still right and wrong, and we have to teach them that. You know, I know you don't want to go to church on Sunday. Maybe it's, you know, you're tired and all, but you know, that's not even an issue in our house, because it was never, oh, you must be tired, you know. And that's something important, because we want to also have them grow up to be strong adults, strong emotions. You know what I mean? Does it make sense?
It does. And I always tell my children, life isn't fair. And they hate when I say that, because the young ones will be like, well, I can't be in the iPad. And the middle one is like, well, I can't stay up late. And the old one is like, well, I don't have time to do chores in the house, because I'm going to college right now. So everyone says life isn't fair. And you know what? It's not fair. There's millions of people without a job today, mm-hmm. right? There's millions of people who are working, who are going out there, and first responders and nurses and doctors and firefighters and grocery store people and property management mm-hmm. workers that are essential to us. That's not fair. They're not mm-hmm. fair. They're being put, but they're taking that responsibility on. Mm-hmm. So I want my children to understand that life just isn't fair.
Yeah.
You know, they're born with great parents. Not a lot of people are afforded that luxury. So I just want them to understand that. And I think the other thing, I think right now what we should do with our children, this is getting off a little bit on the negotiation topic, but still make them understand that when you go to the store, you may not be able to find coconut water or organic apples mm-hmm. or whatever we're so accustomed to having.
To having everything, the comfort.
Yes.
Yes, you're right. We're so used to getting everything we want at the grocery store, wherever. Amazon, yeah. Oh my gosh, anything you think of.
Yeah. And having that gratitude mm-hmm. for the stuff when we do have it, and when we don't have it, we'll do something else. That's something that my wife was just talking about, you know, 30 seconds ago. I just wanted to throw that in. That's really important. That's an important learning lesson for our children that, you know, as we become prosperous and as we've, you know, even the poverty level, I mean, when someone's in this country is poor, they still have an iPhone. Mm-hmm. They still have great food. They still have a car they're renting. They still have an apartment. So it's all relative to what else is happening on in the rest of the world. So just let's teach our kids that life sometimes isn't fair. We have to do the best with the cards we're dealt. Right now, it's a difficult situation. If we can't find something, you know, it's not the end of the world. And just let's be grateful for the people that are working right now and that are helping out and providing for us.
Well, one of the things that you do that I love is when you ask the kids what they're grateful for, just randomly throughout mm-hmm. the day, at nighttime, whenever. And I love it because their answers are so simple. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, they're, you know, and I love that because we think about, you know, the kids want all this big stuff, but they're grateful for the, like the simple things in life. And I think that's mm-hmm. something maybe to ask everyone, you know, our family is, what are you grateful for today? And, you know, think simplicity, because I love being home. You know, we have the coronavirus thing going on right now. And what I see is people together. And I love that. So I always see the good in everything. So when we go to the beach, all the families are playing together. They're doing activities together. They're walking, they're biking together. I'm like, this is beautiful. There's so much beauty that's in it that we always choose to see the negative. But there's so much good going on.
She balances me out, because what I see is people not working and not paying mortgage payments, not paying rent, and not being able to afford food. But they're home. You know what I'm saying? So it's good that she balances that out.
I love it. So. I love it, because how many people I've talked to in the past forever, you know, oh, you know, I would be home with my kids at nighttime having dinner, but I don't have time. We have all these activities going on. Well, you know what? Now is the time. I love it. Spend the time with each other and enjoy each other, appreciate each other. Yes, it's hard. There's so much going on. It's so loud, you know, but once in a while, just sit and think, wow, this is beautiful mm-hmm. to be together.
So let me ask you an empowering question. What are the next steps parents should take to start negotiating better with their kids?
Well, like I said, you know, early, pay attention to your mood, pay attention to their mood, the whole surrounding situation. Look at what's going on before you jump into that conversation, because that really does make a difference, especially if it's a little kid. You know, make that eye contact with them. Listen to them. Listen to what they're telling you. Don't just go into the conversation saying, this is the outcome, no matter what, because we don't know the other side yet. You know, show compassion, but be real, be gentle with them. Ask them those questions, figure out what they're asking and how you can help. Maybe mention some solutions that maybe you can work on together, because the kids, like I said, they want to be part of it. They want to be part of the solution half the time, but we just don't give them a chance because they're young and we think that they don't know anything, but they're so smart, you know? So give them a chance and then encourage them. Leave on a positive. Say, you know, you're awesome. You're incredible. I'm really proud of you. You know, how about next week we talk about this again? Let's figure this out together. We'll see how it works out, and let's touch on it again next week, see where it comes.
So here's the framework that I think my wife just said. Be conscious of what your thoughts are and of what the situation is. Be aware, right? Number two. Number three is listen. Listen attentively to what's going on. Number four, have compassion. Number five, figure out how you can help them if they need help, where you can help them out. And number six, have encouragement and be positive mm-hmm. in the situation. And I think the last thing for me would be that word autonomy again. Just make sure that you're not taking away their autonomy. You're not giving them options and they feel like they don't have any other choice. And it's the same thing in business. When you're surrounded and you're boxed in, once again, like I want to say, and you're desperate. You do desperate things. You're not thinking clearly when it comes to that. Don't let that happen to your children, because they're not going to. You're 99 out of 100 times you're not going to come up with a solution, mm-hmm. and you're going to make a big mistake in that situation.
Yeah, just stay in control. You know, remember that silence when you ask a question. Just be silent. Do not answer the question for them. Because that's like the most irritating thing. I'm looking at my husband right now. Because that shows strength. When you ask a question and you remain silent, it shows leadership. It shows strength. And that's something that they need to see. But trust them. You know, the kids are smart.
Julie, what I want the listeners to do is I want you all out there to email us at gino@jakeandgino.com. I want to hear some great homeschooling stories. I want to share a couple of stories next week of what you all have done, having the kids home, what activities you've done, what you've learned, and how you've succeeded. And give us some like really great
good and bad ones.
Crappy stories too. Exactly. Some like bad ones, like, wow, I didn't do anything today. The kids were in pajamas all day today. And that happens to us often.
You know, I have to tell you that this morning I woke up to Veronica was cleaning the kitchen. She was organizing. And I'm like, gosh, she's in a really good mood. And I said, you know what? Let's just clean this morning. And everyone's like, okay. And everyone was happy. And I'm like, all right, we'll just go with it. Mm-hmm. You know, we did home ec in the morning. Okay. It was good. Mm-hmm. But then they got back to it. And that's something to just pay attention to the kids.
Yep. So email us at gino@jakeandgino.com. Any final words?
No, I just, you know, you guys are awesome out there. I just want to thank you for contacting us. I love to hear your stories. I love to hear just you saying thank you to us for the podcast. It means so much to us. So keep that coming. And I just want to encourage all the parents out there, all the couples, married couples, that, you know, we're in this together. We're all this team trying to figure it out. We're all messing up all the time. You know, keep that sense of humor, especially now. And you're going to be fine, you know?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for being part of the Jake and Gino family and sharing part of your day with us. Take care, everybody.